exciting.
Welcome back to PDGA Radio this day after Valentine's Day 2022. Hopefully you had a good Valentine's Day, or maybe you had a good day of not worrying too much about the fact that it was Valentine's Day. Am I right? I mean, come on. I'm right.
Everyone wants to make sure they didn't blow a lot of money on flowers, or that they did. One or the two. It's you get to choose right. One lane.
Or if you don't have a Valentine, which I many years I didn't have a Valentine, you just want to get through the day, right?
Right.
just cruise on to a Tuesday and everything's going to be fine. And that's what we did. Well, speaking of the fact we just had our weekend and our Monday Valentine's Day, Jen, you were out at the All-Star Challenge this past weekend. How did that go?
Well, the weather was absolutely amazing. A little chilly. The girls got started very early. And, you know, Arizona right now, we have some beautiful tank top and short afternoons, but the mornings are extremely cold, kind of wet and dewy on the golf courses because they water them. So the girls kind of probably felt like it was more winter time, and the boys definitely probably had to use quite a bit of sunblock. But the venue down in Tucson is absolutely gorgeous. I hope everyone got to watch the Disc Golf Pro Tour Network and see some incredible golf. It came down right to the very literally last putt for pretty much both teams to declare a winner. So very exciting.
That was really, really exciting. Take us a little behind the scenes, because you weren't playing, but you were down there as sort of an unofficial coach maybe to some of your teammates.
Coach,
I don't know.
More like cheerleader, team mom, team mom. I feel like I'm team mom. So we had a lot of Innova women competing this weekend. So being so close, I wanted to make sure I was down there to show them my support and to root them on. So caddied for Haley King, our new member to the team, Innova, and watched some incredible golf. Was able to be on the same card as Lisa and Jessica, as well as watched Owen and Haley compete on their team event. So a lot of Innova women to watch. So
that was really, really fun to watch both sides competing down there. And that you're right. That course was really, really picturesque. And I expect a similar viewing experience coming up next week here just more than a week from now as we sit at the Las Vegas Challenge. You spent your weekend watching some great disc golf at a beautiful course. I spent my weekend, how terrible is this, running around to things like the mall. I hate the mall.
I hate shopping, period.
I can't, because I'm getting all my stuff ready to go for a busy season of traveling out to a number of events this year. And the first one that I'll be at is the Las Vegas Challenge. So I spent the whole weekend doing boring adult things, you know.
It has to be done.
Right. Like getting charging cords, right? And luggage and things like that, so I can have as pain-free an experience at those wonderful institutions known as airports for the course of the season. So that's how I spent my weekend. And now I'm finally getting a chance to sit back and relax as we welcome in our guest, Jeff Jacquart, the TD for the Las Vegas Challenge, stepping into the PDGA radio studio, going to give us the lowdown on the upcoming opening event of the Disc Golf Pro Tour season. Live from Las Vegas, or at least live as of the recording of this episode of PDGA Radio, it's Jeff. Well, Jeff, let's be honest. People tell me that your name is Jeff Jacquart, but I get a feeling that's sort of an Americanized version of your name. Am I accurate in that assumption?
It is, according to my dad. When he was stationed in rural France, they were actually calling him Jacquart. So I've been going by Jacquart, but Jacquart would be an American version that I used in middle school.
Tournament director of the Las Vegas Challenge. If you call him Jeff Jacquart, he probably won't be too upset with you. But Jeff Jacquart, I feel like if I go with Jacquart, then your first name has to be Jeff.
Even better. I like that too.
Fancy time. Well, Jeff, thanks so much for joining us. We know how incredibly busy you are as we lead up to this running of the Las Vegas Challenge. So thanks for the time. Let's just kind of start at the beginning. With so many listeners to PDGA Radio being maybe newer to the sport, they have no idea the history behind the Las Vegas Challenge. So let's take them back to the beginning.
Well, like any event that has grown over the years, we started off pretty small back in 2000. We had less than 50 players as a little C tier. We started at Sunset Park over one weekend, one of the oldest courses that are remaining in the United States. Started off with seven holes back in the late 1970s. And over the last 23 years, where I have been the TD the entire time, we have grown and grown and grown. We went from one weekend at Sunset Park, which can accommodate about 200 players, to two weekends, which doubled our field to 400 players. But that's a lot of work to run an event over two weekends. And our previous club president, John Ricker, said, hey, how about we move this to a ball golf course and we can fit in three courses? And I said, we can't afford the rent. You know, it's $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 a day. And I'm the financial guy as well. I couldn't make it work. He said, Jeff, take a deep breath. In addition to the normal fee to play, we can add on a greens fee. So after crunching the numbers, the first year we were at Wild Horse, which is our transition in 2017, we went from Sunset Park to Wild Horse. I needed 444 players to break even on paying the rent, because our rent is a large portion of our cost.
Sure.
It was over $20,000 the last 4 or 5 years. And as long as we have 444 players, we break even. Right now, we have about 560 players playing in the events. Our rent has gone up with inflation, but we've also added three formal days of practice play. So now our rent went from around $20,000 to $25,000 to $45,000.
Wow.
It's amazing the cost recovery that's needed, excluding spectators, to make an event at this scale. And it's no longer just a disc golf event. It's almost an entire experience. But we need to recover almost six figures just to get our money back to break even for the event, which we're able to do because of all the love and support of our many sponsors. But the event has just grown like crazy. And we're trying to figure out amongst the leads of the Las Vegas Challenge if we can make it financially work to move to a two-weekend format next year. We think we can, but then our rent goes from $45,000 to close to six figures. So now trying to imagine what the greens fee is going to be if we had to reduce the courses down to just two courses for the pro weekend. Our current greens fee, we only charge $75. It really should have been about $85. So I'm losing $10 per player there. But if we lose 180 players going in the next year, Jennifer Allen's green fee is going to be close to $115 to recoup that cost.
Whew.
So it's something new and different that I think the growth of disc golf is experiencing is what does it take to make these events succeed? And there's a lot of money hidden behind this that I don't think a lot of people realize. And I'm an open book. So if anyone wants to sit down and talk to me about income and costs, I am an open book. I was able to include our finances in our caddy book last year, which is still up on our website. I just ran out of time to include those details in the caddy book this year.
And you didn't even mention the parking.
No. So this year is our first year for spectators. So I mentioned it's close to six figures to recover just the players' event cost. Now throwing on the spectators, this is Las Vegas. Everything is expensive. I need to recoup another $50,000 in spectator income to break even there. And right now, we're not there. My parking lot rental is $10,000. My shuttle bus is close to $20,000. My pedestrian fencing is $5,000. We're getting two flaggers out on Warm Springs, which is close to $2,000. So I need $50,000 just to break even on the spectators. And we're not quite there. I think we're going to get there. But it doesn't leave a lot of wiggle room to add, you know, additional money to the payout unless the spectator income either increases like crazy or we can figure out a way to decrease that financial burden on accommodating the spectators. It's just a learning experience for our sport.
And I only bring that up because I do know the backside of it. And most people don't. There are so much cost into these tournaments to make them amazing that people just think kind of happens magically. Like you got this magic wand and everything just is perfect. But there's so much work and cost that goes into this event. And I've been there for a long time. I was able to play a few at Sunset, I believe, before you moved over. So much growth, but so much hard work as well that went into this.
There's a lot of experience. How do I say this in a grammatically correct way? There are a lot of experiences going on right now. There's the experience being had by the professional players themselves. There's the experience that's being had by the staff and the volunteers. And obviously, in order to have volunteers enjoy their time and want to come back and volunteer again, they need to have a positive experience. There's the experience being had on site by spectators, and there's the experience being had by those not fortunate enough to be able to be there in person, but enjoying the coverage either on Disc Golf Network or perhaps post-produced coverage via video. And that's been, I think, one of the real strengths of the Las Vegas Challenge is how picturesque things come across on a screen. Has that been a noticeable factor for you as you've led this tournament over the years?
For sure it has. Wild Horse is a hidden little gem that I live only 10 minutes away. I never knew the facility was there. I used to live next to the property boundary in my first house. And it's just a hidden little gem. When you pull up into the main roundabout off Warm Springs, you never realize there's a 140-acre ball golf course in the middle of a desert that we can use for disc golf. It's just amazing. If you didn't realize this, we only get 4 inches of rain in Las Vegas. Phoenix gets twice as much rain as us. They get about 8 inches of rain per year. So we truly are in a desert, which is why we don't have a lot of disc golf courses out here. So we're very lucky. We're able to partner with Elite Golf and Wild Horse to allow us to have not only Las Vegas Challenge hosted there, but also to allow for casual play throughout the entire year on their morning course and their afternoon course. It is so pretty out there. And it's only one of two golf courses that have been certified by the Audubon Society for sanctioning and protection as well.
Oh, that's really cool. Wow. So there are, for those listening right now, there are permanent disc golf courses set up in and amongst the ball golf courses there at Wild Horse?
Correct. We have a morning course, which can start from sunrise to about half an hour after sunrise, where they can play 21 or 24 holes, depending on what layout they play. And they're really close to the LVC layout. And then in the afternoon, starting around 2:30 or 3, they can play the afternoon course, which is most of course Innova. And the last four holes, of course, Factory Store. So they've been so great to work with. And we're also really lucky that because we're in a desert environment, there's a lot of xeriscaping where we can place a lot of our really cool looking tee pads into their facility without permanently damaging their fairways, their greens, etc. It's worked out so well. I never thought it would ever grow like this on a ball golf course in Las Vegas.
Always a plus when fans can go out and experience at least some of the same, looks as the pros get to have when they're playing the course. You can throw essentially the same shot or essentially the same putt as you saw on, say, Disc Golf Network a few weeks ago. So that's always really exciting. But there are going to be three courses in play this week at the Las Vegas Challenge. Can you tell us about the characteristics of those courses and maybe how they might have changed a little bit from years past? I know there's always tweaks happening.
Sure. Something you just mentioned, Grant, has been really important to our team, that everyone is able to play the same courses so they can always compare their scores across the board. An example would be Jennifer Allen did really, really well playing Female Pro Open a couple of years ago, and they wanted to compare her score to the Open Women's Field. And it's easy to do that because everyone's playing the exact same course. We also have all of our amateurs that are saying, how am I playing against Paul McBeth and Ricky Wysocki? How would I fit into their world? And that's what our event allows them to do because everyone's playing the same courses. Not everyone likes it, but that's what we thought was important to us because we wanted to give all of our players that experience. Now that disc golf is growing and changing and there's a new level of professionalism, we need to go back and rethink that thought process if we're able to move to a two-weekend format next year. Who knows what's going to happen? There's a lot of things we're throwing out on the table, but it was important for us for everyone to play the same course. With that being said, we've had our course changes from last year to this year up on our website since September. Very minor tweaks. There's maybe one or two new holes that are kind of the same. But what we do is we go in and we assess all the scores for each hole between the open men, the open women. We also look at the AMs and the age protected professionals, and we see just which holes are way too hard or which holes are way too easy. And we'll make adjustments to accommodate basically the pars for the open women and open men. And then that way the age protected pros and the amateurs have to improve their game to keep up with the elite fields. So an example would be we were able to make a 880-foot hole on course Innova, which is our premier course, and we thought for sure it would be a par five. After looking at the scores, these open men are just getting so good, and it's amazing how far they can throw that their average was closer to a four. So we changed that par to a four, but we kept the layout the same. It's still a five for a women, but the par is a four for men. Another thing we do is we have everyone playing the same tee pads because I kind of believe in the KISS concept. Keep everything simple, stupid.
Nice.
And if there's more variations in who's going to use what tee pad do we use which round, which basket do we throw to based on the round, it just complicates everything. I understand it may be needed to improve competition between the divisions, but there's also going to be problems with that. And we've seen that over the years. So everyone just has their own perspective as the best way to run an event. We think we kind of know what we're doing. We're pretty popular. We had 300 people on the wait list at one time, almost 100 on the elite field, over 200 on our A-tier field. So if we didn't know what we were doing, I'm not quite sure so many people would want to come to our event.
Well said. Well said. So just a few tweaks for those that follow the event very, very closely and have over the years, at least since 2017, when the move out to Wild Horse took place. So there'll be, I would expect, a lot of familiarity, which is kind of fun when you tune into an event that's become maybe a favorite. And, you know, this is the first Disc Golf Pro Tour event of the calendar year. So surely a lot of people have just been experiencing some disc golf withdrawals over the last few months, and they'll get to assuage their feelings in one great big weekend of disc golf. I know I'm excited to be able to be on course and to enjoy things this week as well. Are there any final expectations that you have specific to this particular running of the event? I'm talking about things like, you know, I know you monitor things like the weather very, very closely. Are there anything unexpected to come from there? You mentioned this will be, did you say the first year there'll be fans in attendance physically on the property? What do you expect from that experience? Just those kinds of things. What can you tell us that are unique to this year's running?
Well, one thing that we heard from a couple of the touring pros is I wanted to go back to the course layout. So we do have three courses, mm-hmm. and they each kind of have their own little feel. We try to expand on those feels a little bit. But for example, Course Infinite is our middle course. It's very technical. It's shorter than the other two courses, but we've really enhanced the technicality improvements. This is also the course with the triple island, which some people don't like, but we've also learned from disc golf managers that you need to incorporate risk and reward holes. And our triple island hole is that risk and reward hole for Course Infinite. You can get a two, you can get a four, you can get an easy three, you can get a 12.
Who's been watching me?
I know. And then if the viewers and listeners didn't know, Course Factory Store is kind of our monster course. It's pretty wide open. You have to have some really long throws. So we do have a distance course, but it's not much longer than Course Innova. Course Innova, we've been able to lengthen as well. It's just under 9,000 feet, but it contains a lot of water and is much more technical. So we have a warm-up course. If you're looking at the elite field, they kind of warm up on Thursday on Course Infinite. Then they move over to our premier course, which would be Course Innova, all the water. Then they really get to open up their arms on Saturday and play Coors Factory Store. Once they've loosened up, they can really crush all those drives. And then for those that made the cut, only 40% of each field, the elites would go back and play Coors Innova, our premier course. Now, we have had spectators in the past because we already have so many people on site. You know, 560 players plus, let's say, 300 to 400 caddies, plus all the volunteers and vendors, there's already 1,000 people on site. So we have pretty big crowds on Saturday and Sunday. But bringing in a paid spectator experience is going to be something new for us. And one thing I learned after going to Goat Hill, ran by Alan Risley, is use those ball golf carts as the spectator pass. So after I attended that event, I went back to Wild Horse with some of our leads, and we drove all three of our courses and said, if I was a spectator, could we fit at least 1,000, if not 2,000 spectators on each one of these fairways, and they can enjoy and experience 90% of the throws? And the answer was yes. The way we were able to lay out this flow and follow those cart paths, we have built in some fairway crossovers. But we think from a spectator experience, you know, our event is also going to excel. So that's something new for us, where we went from really trying to enhance the player experience, the caddy experience. I want to make sure my volunteers are happy. The media seems to be having a good time. So now the last element is the spectators. And I think we're going to get a lot of positive feedback from their experience as well.
That's a really good point, that for so many tournament directors, including longtime tournament directors like yourself, this has been a new and growing factor over the course of the last few years. The concern of not only having to deal with the logistics of spectators moving around in a way that doesn't upset the flow of play, but also even more and more the spectators needing to enjoy their experience so that they come back again in the future, because more eyes on the sport in any capacity is obviously a plus for the sport and leads itself to other pluses like income that helps keep these events running and, you know, all of those sorts of things. So that's obviously been something that you have had to pay a lot of attention to during the course of the past. Did you say 23 years?
This will be my 23rd year as the TD. With my new role as the PDGA, this will be my last year being the official TD. We'll be handing over the business elements to my wife, and she will be a co-TD next year. So that would be Jessica Jacquois. And then Scott Merritt will kind of be the on the ground, feet running amok on the courses, making sure that everything is functioning on the ground. So there's going to be a co-TD event next year, and Scott Merritt, Jessica Jacquois will be running it with much, much help from what we've now created as the Las Vegas Leads. We have so many people helping us now throughout the entire year. The event couldn't occur without so many people helping us.
You know what that means, Grant? If it goes bad, we're stealing him back. And sorry, PDGA, but we're going to have to take him back.
Well, on that note, let's not bury that little detail right there. Jeff, you're transitioning to a new role. As a matter of fact, you've already got the role as the director of competition with the PDGA. So you're one of my coworkers, which is great. Welcome, by the way. I don't even know, honestly, if I beat you or you beat me into the office. But the fact of the matter is you've got a new role, and I'd love to hear a little summary of what that will entail, the director of competition role with the PDGA.
So hello, Grant, co-worker with the PDGA. I am so excited to be with the PDGA right now. I have learned over the last month or so that the membership growth, the number of sanctioned events have grown so much that it's amazing the PDGA was able to survive over the last 20 to 30 years, because they really didn't have the resources based on the expectations that the players and the TDs had. And it really kind of wasn't fair that they didn't have the resources, because the growth of this golf is a lot dependent on their support. So it's really good to see that the membership growth is allowing them to hire more staff. And I happen to be one of those new staff. You had Big Dog, Andrew Sweeten, you had Michael Downs, you had others doing this work prior to me, Sean Sinclair, of course, Todd Lyon, who's still at the PDGA. all out there running amok, trying to make sure the majors happen, those that are owned by the PDGA, those that are partnered with the PDGA, like the USDGC. And it seemed like, just hearing how much work they were doing, they were barely able to keep the ship afloat. And now it's nice to see that there's more staff being hired to not only make that ship float, but sail like our members and our tournament directors demand. And I think it's a great future for our sport. My role is going to be strictly focusing on the major events, and then, of course, helping out the Disc Golf Pro Tour as a marshalling program with the elite tours. So there is more feet on the ground at the elite events and the major events from the PDGA perspective to make sure everything is going as smooth as we can. There's always going to be hiccups. We learned that at the Worlds in Utah last year, no matter how much pre-planning you do, something's going to happen. We just got to be prepared for it. We got to learn from those experiences, move on, and see if we can avoid it at a future event. But there's always going to be problems. And I think one of my roles as doing this for 23 years in Las Vegas, with the growth of it, is I can bring that experience to other major events as well. Not that they all need it. Some of them have more experience than I have. But I'm really looking forward to the partnership, working with all the majors this year, next year, and into the future.
Yeah, definitely. I can echo a lot of your sentiments as a relatively new part of the PDGA team as well. Just in the 6 or 7 months since I've been on board, the growth and the new things that we're focused on and that we're emphasizing in a big way, the responsiveness to the point you just made, when an issue arises or when an opportunity arises, maybe that's a better way to look at it, to be able to respond and throw attention and resources at that opportunity, whatever it is, and actually do something, whether it's capitalize on something positive or whether it's fixing something that had been a negative. It's really happening very, very quickly. And it's part of why I'm sure I speak for you. It's part of why we are so busy right now as we launch into the 2022 season. Well, welcome.
Thank you.
and you and I will be, I'm sure, part of lots of encouraging notes back and forth to each other, just to keep on keeping on, because that's what I get in my inbox with a great deal of frequency. Jeff, before we let you go, something that happens a lot with Jennifer and I here on PDGA Radio is we get questions in from our listeners. And we have a question from a listener sent in just a couple of weeks ago that I circled your name because I thought, given your previous role as director of the Las Vegas Challenge and your now and future role as director of competition with the PDGA, I can't think of anybody more uniquely qualified to speak to this issue. So if you've got another couple of minutes, I'd love to get your take on this particular question. Can you stay?
Of course.
Been absolutely loving all the questions we've been getting on Ask PDGA Radio. We get one this week from @thenelser. He asks us, should tournament directors and volunteers be compensated for their time? They're the lifeblood of the sport and essential to sustain the growth we're experiencing.
Well, at the Nelsor, we knew that we'd get a chance to address your question within a couple of weeks of when you asked it. I did not know we'd have such a resident expert in the studio to get to talk about this very topic. But with Jeff here today, I can't think of anybody better. Jeff, what is your gut reaction to that kind of question of tournament directors and even volunteers, or I assume other staff at events, being compensated for their time?
Well, my position has changed over the years, and if you'd give me a couple of minutes, I'd like to explain why.
Sure.
At first, I didn't think it was fair that the TD and or the assistant TD was getting paid, especially for smaller events, because it kind of discourages the growth of our sport. As the event got bigger, I kept questioning that, even though we do have a little online store, Jacquois Events LLC, and we can make a little profit off those sales. What we opt to do is to put 90% of those profits back into the tournament for this year or next year. So yes, we do have sales, but there isn't much profit to it. So over the years, other TDs have been saying, Jeff, you really need to start to take a fee. And in my eyes, it's not fair if the TD and or the core staff get paid if all the other volunteers can't somehow get compensated. And as I mentioned earlier, we have at least 150 volunteers, formal volunteers. I want to say 90% of them aren't playing. They're here at least 4, 5, 6 days out of their own personal schedule. So to try to compensate everyone with some type of hourly rate is something we've been playing with the last 9 months. So first, let's go back to the TD. So PayPal takes 2.9% of each player's entry. What I kind of been playing with is if the TD can meet the PDGA requirement for payout and there's enough sponsorship money allocated to the events, then you can flatten out that player's fee to be 5%, or the TD can take 2.1%. Really, this is coming from your sponsors, but I think that may be a starting point for our world. So for the LVC, that's about $3,000. Now, anyone who runs a 500-person event for the last 7 years knows that $3,000 is not a lot of money when I'm putting 9 months of work into this event. But it's a starting point. At least we're moving somewhere. My next thought was, well, then how can I or should I be able to pay all the volunteers? So let's just say that there's a $100,000 profit from spectators. And let's say the payout is incredible, all the bills are paid, and there's $25,000 to $50,000 left over from the event to pay all of the volunteers. What we're trying to do is track all the volunteer hours. When they come to the LVC to help starting on Saturday, we're going to have them check in so we can see how many hours they put in. When you break down all those hours from 150 people and you average that out, that cost out to over $25,000 or $50,000, it's not a lot of money for these guys to be out here for a full week. It's only a couple hundred dollars. So we kind of moved away from actually compensating cash for our volunteers to enhancing their enjoyment of volunteering at the event. So like you have mentioned a couple of times, make sure they enjoy the experience, but also want to come back and maybe bring more volunteers next year. So it's costing me about $25,000 cash to make sure that the volunteers are enjoying the Las Vegas Challenge. This is on top of all the sponsors that are also giving goodies to many of the volunteers, but also totals of over $20,000 in goods. For example, Infinite is giving each one of, or a majority of our volunteers, one of their retrievers, which is incredible. We have worked with Innova, and Innova is giving them one or two really cool shirts. Wait till you see the shirts for the LVC this year. And if you didn't know, for the last 5 to 7 years, the volunteer shirts are blue because we're all blue-collar workers. We're the ones that are out there sweating tears, making sure everyone else is having a good time. So blue is really important to my volunteers.
I like the symbolism there.
But just to feed my volunteers, just to have one good dinner where we sit down, kumbaya, make sure everyone's on the same page, is a $3,000 to $5,000 cost. Just to give each one of them a really cool disc is another couple thousand dollars. Mm-hmm. To pay for additional shirts is another couple thousand dollars. Mm-hmm. Then when they're on site for at least 4 days, they're only going to get 2 or 3 meals per day. We're lucky that Wild Horse gives us a good break on the meals, but our total food cost is over $10,000 just to feed all the staff. So they walk away with a little bit of a full belly. They walk away with a disc or two. They walk away with 2 polos. All that costs $20,000 to $25,000. And hopefully that's enough to make them really enjoy the event. We do a couple special staff raffles for them. They get first dibs on the co-branded Calvin Heinberg Destroyer. So they are the first ones to get those co-branded discs. You just got to make them feel special because the LVC cannot exceed and excel without the volunteers. My wife and I and my other leads can work our butt off for 9 months out of the year. But if everyone else doesn't come together, the event is going to fall apart. And I think that's something that everyone's missing is not only how do the TDs keep the energy to keep going, but how can we get the volunteers energetic to not only want to support an event at this level, but then go home and say, I want to become like such and such event. I want to do my own thing here at my hometown. We have a friend coming in from Alaska who came in last year on his own dime and said, after last year's experience, Jeff, I'm never going to miss the LVC again. That just makes me feel so good. It's volunteerism. I mean, our sport is still built on it. Can we someday pay for all the volunteers? You know, after thinking about this for 6 months, if there's other ways to enhance their experience by giving them a good dinner, a couple extra shirts, we rented out the Pinball Hall of Fame for a party the Sunday before the event, right on the strip. It's all those little things that make them say, you know what? It wasn't work. It was an experience. It was fun. It was almost a vacation. Jeff didn't whip us too hard. So I think I'm going to go back next year.
That's really, really cool. You know, Jennifer and I forwarded this question to some of the event services team here at the PDGA. Todd Lyon, Mike Sullivan is on that team. Let's see, Rebecca Duffy is on that team to get their input on the topic. And their input mirrors some of what you just said, Jeff, about, you know, what we're basically talking about here with regard to trying to we'll use the word compensate to try to compensate TDs whose jobs are getting ever more complex and ever more time consuming. There are other event staff, of course. There are the volunteers that you just mentioned, which are just an army of willing hearts. You know, the bottom line is whether or not the event itself is profitable, where after taking care of all the obligations to put on the event, to have the proper payout for the participants in the event, when that's all said and done, if there are profits left over, wherever those profits came from, often and more now those profits might be coming from sponsors, then yeah, out of those profits, there might be more and growing opportunities to compensate TDs, staff members, and to, if not compensate financially, volunteers, to enhance the volunteer experience. So as long as things are, in the words of guys like Todd Lyon and Mike Sullivan, as long as things are transparent, as long as, you know, the finances are all on the up and up, then there absolutely is an opportunity for more and more tournament directors and others to be able to profit from the game of disc golf, which is really cool.
So building on that, Grant, so right now for this event, my wife and I are not taking a fee because we have not been able to balance the books because the spectator costs are really outrageous right now, and we have under 300 currently registered spectators on disc golf scene. So in the caddy book right now, it shows a very rough draft payout of only $15,000 being added to the elite side of the event. That is dependent on spectators. The PDGA requirement is $25,000. As we get more spectators to sign up for the event, I am sure we're going to meet the $25,000 payout. But right now, just to meet the $15,000 cash added, I am still short $12,000. So my wife and I have already tried to raise close to $20,000 for the event with partnership with Innova through Halo sales, etc. And we're still $12,000 short to break even and only add $15,000 cash to the elite. So we still need, let's say, about 160 weekend spectator passes to break even to add 15,000 cash. Then anything on top of that, we will likely be able to meet the $25,000 cash payout. But again, I can't emphasize enough, we're still short $12,000 to meet that payout. So in order for us to meet the $25,000 cash payout and me pay all my bills for the spectators, I would then be close to short $25,000 that would have to come out of my own pocket. These are some of the learning experiences and struggles for bigger events that is a mom and pop type of LLC, where I don't have $250,000 that I can access and say, if I'm short this year, I'll just pull it out from some future funding for next year. I know that caught some of the folks off guard in the draft payouts that were posted in the caddy book. We're just doing the best we can. If we don't sell one more spectator pass, the LLC loses over $10,000 and we're still adding $15,000 cash. We're doing the best we can and it's a learning experience for us. But the cost to accommodate the spectators was nothing like anyone expected. We have weekly calls with the Disc Golf Pro Tour. We told them the shuttle service costs. We told them the parking lot rental costs. And we're a big city. And there's a little bit of greed in Las Vegas. It's not much of a partnership. And we're doing what we can. It's a learning experience for us. And I'm sure we're going to get to that $25,000 cash added. But I just wanted to go on record that we're doing the best we can. And if we don't get a lot more spectators to sign up, we're just doing the best we can.
Well, it really is kind of a treat to get to hear some of the behind the scenes details of putting on a really big event. I think it's really educational for a lot of those listening that either participate in these events or attend these events or just sort of loosely follow these events and these topics that are beginning to become a big part of the game of disc golf as it grows. So that's really interesting to hear how complicated it can really be with the financial aspects of putting on an event like this. But like you said,
hopefully that's eye-opening to maybe some beginner or players or people who want to run these events. You know, they think, oh, wow, look at all the money being made at these golf tournaments. If you do this right, it's really not. And so hopefully that's eye-opening to people to know that if you don't put on a good event and do things correctly, people aren't going to come back. You know, Jeff's tournament has been so successful all these years and he's done everything right. And it's still not a huge profitable tournament for him as a TD. So hopefully that's a little eye-opening to those TDs out there who think that they can just come and make a lot of money in this sport. To do it right, it's more for the love of the game, I feel like, and that's just my personal opinion.
And then to build on that, so I'm sure we're going to break even this year. If not, I may be getting a divorce because Jessica might be asking me to go away. But with that being said, you know, with the spectator growth, hopefully there's going to be future income from the media side of things that are shared with TDs. I know that's another thing that we haven't quite talked about because our sport is so young. But now let's look at 2023. If we reduced the pro weekend by 180 players, that means the greens fees for the other side either have to increase or they have to be recaptured by sponsors or spectators. So let's just real quickly talk about the financial implications of losing a course at the LVC. If I just did two courses the pro weekend, I would likely lose a course sponsor. Why would someone want to sponsor a course that isn't going to be aired on the media? So Infinite is $19,000 this year. We're expecting those values to continue to increase. So that potential would be $25,000 next year. So we would likely lose a $20,000 to $25,000 sponsor. On top of that, I lose a greens fee from 180 players. That's close to $14,000 at $75 a pop. So we're short $20,000 to $25,000 from losing a course sponsor. We're short $14,000 to $15,000 from greens fees collected by players. But also because of all of our sponsors, I'm able to take some of the AM entries and dump it into the pro payouts. It's about $100 per AM. Some say we're robbing from the AMs and giving to the pros, but we're not, because the AMs are getting more than a 300% payback and we're trying to have the pros be a 200% payback. So you're really not robbing from the AMs. I'm just trying to break even. But at $100 a pop, that's close to another $20,000. So now let's add those three together. I lose a course sponsor at least $20,000. I can no longer rob from the AMs, which is another $20,000. And I lose course fees, green fees of $15,000. So I'm $55,000 short to just use two courses at the LVC. No one has ever really sat down with me and say, Jeff, how can we pencil this out? There might be other ways to come up with the money, but it's $55,000. So even if our spectators increase to 2,000 spectators over the weekend instead of just 500, that's one way that we can maybe accommodate that revenue loss. But I think that there's potential for shared media income that can help offset some of those losses. And that's, again, because we're such a new and young sport, we're not quite there yet. But that's one thing that no one has ever really sat down and talked to me and say, Jeff, I would like to sponsor $50,000 so you do only use two courses. You know, that's an easy fix right there, but we're not there yet.
So I love the Infinite Course, and we know that they have always supported this tournament, but I'm sure there's a few other great sponsors, Jeff. Wink, wink.
There are some other great sponsors. First is Factory Store. They've come through with at least $25,000 cash through a variety of funding sources, but the big one for the LVC this year are the Halos. We sold 200 rather quickly. We might have a couple more during the co-branded sale Thursday night. We'll have to wait and see. But Factory Store has stepped up like crazy again. And then, of course, there's Innova. I mean, they've been our longtime partner. They're over $125,000, maybe $130,000 this year. At least $50,000 in merchandise to the amateur player packs. There's some left over for being added to the pros and the volunteers. They do so much amazing support for the event because we are just a little mom and pop LLC. Without Innova, this event could not succeed. But there's many others as well. I just quickly tallied up our total sponsorship worth, and it's just over $280,000 in sponsorship. And about half of that is cash and about half of that in merchandise or cost savings. So, for example, we've partnered up with Work Zone Traffic. It's a barricade transportation construction company. Those were the ones that you'll see setting the cones up on the road. They have saved us close to $10,000 in cost by being able to get the permit to shut down the two emergency parking lanes on Warm Springs. They've donated close to 2,000 feet of pedestrian railing for spectators. It's not quite enough. I still have to rent some. But it's these long-term partnerships that you really don't know where they're going to go. But the event, again, can't happen with so many people loving the sport. We have basic sponsors of flags for $50, all the way up to our title sponsor, well over six figures. So much, much love to all of our sponsors.
So for everyone listening who wants to see this tournament and all others grow, sponsor an event.
Or support those who sponsor an event. How about that?
There's so many ways to make an event grow.
Interesting stuff. And complicated stuff, really, when you get that deep into the financial aspects of such a large event with so many participants, volunteers, spectators, and staff members. That's just wild, the number of things that TD and an event staff has to juggle. Well, Jeff, I can't think of a more thorough answer to a question that was short enough to be asked on Twitter.
I agree totally. And one thing that some of the younger TDs are probably learning is not only do you have to be a public relations guru dealing with all the different player types, you also have to be a negotiator with potential sponsors. You also have to have a finance master's degree to make all the numbers work. You are juggling so many different areas when you're a new TD. And I know what the PDGA is looking into is try to assist new TDs and other TDs as to how to make all this work. Why should new TDs have to go through the same hassle that I've learned over the last two decades, where hopefully the PDGA with some future expansion of some training programs for tournament directors can learn from the experience from some of us more elderly?
Veteran.
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 Legendary.
Yeah.
And ancient.
And that's going to be a win-win for everyone. That's going to be a win for the TDs actually feeling like, you know, everything went well, and hopefully a win for the players attending all these events as well, that they were ran correctly. So I love this program. I think we're going to see some wonderful rewards from that. And also, can I add in there, everyone, thank your volunteers, please. These volunteers do put not only their money and time, but they're trying hard and they're trying to enjoy their experience too. So everyone, thank your volunteers.
Please, please thank them. Love them. Give them high fives. I know there is one young lady that gives everyone some candy, which is absolutely amazing. I still have mine from last year.
Yes, she does. Yes, she does. And hopefully us as pros can just give them a little bit of time as well. Not only the people, the spectators there, but our professional players, we need to make sure that we make their experience great as well. So,
yep, you certainly are the face of the sport. Well, Jeff, if we didn't have a pretty clear picture of how busy you are when you stepped into the PDGA radio studio, we certainly have an idea now of how busy you are. And for that reason alone, we need to let you get out of here. You've got just a handful of days left before the disc golf world and all of its attention descends upon the dusty streets of Las Vegas. And so we want to make sure that you have plenty of time to make sure those final details are, you know, just right.
Well, thank you, sir, because tee times should be posted over the next couple of days.
Woohoo!
All right, Jeff, take care. We'll see you soon.
All right, thanks, guys.
Updating your PDGA news for this week. Last week, player ratings were updated just a handful of days ago, so make sure you get on PDGA.com, look yourself up, and see if your rating went up, down, stayed the same.
Sideways? No, I'm just kidding.
Sideways, slantways. It's like the elevator in the Willy Wonka Chocolate Factory. No, check your ratings out. See if you've got some bragging rights. Make sure you share those on social media with your friends and maybe with your competitors. I mean, hey, it's never too early as the season starts to start, you know, a little trash talking, right? Start intimidating people.
I like it for,
they're going to have to face you.
I like it for self-motivation. I'm finally getting mine back to where it used to be. So it's a motivation internally.
I feel like I did that more on key than last time.
Yes, that was really good. You're getting much better.
The Olympics update. I can't believe we're only halfway through the Olympics. It just seems to go on forever. But we got to get you an update since we know of at least two competitors at the Winter Olympics that are also PDGA members.
Yeah, Oscar Eriksson, PDGA number 189658. He was our Swedish curling bronze medalist in the mixed doubles event, but he is still still competing for an individual medal there. And so hopefully he will be able to take home a little bit more hardware. I actually watched our American female curlers, their team this weekend. I think it was like Saturday night or something. So it's so interesting. I mean, I don't know. It's just an unusual sport. If you haven't watched it, check it out. And it's interesting sport for sure.
It really, really is. Now, as of when we updated you last time, Oscar and his Swedish team, they were going into that bronze medal match. So we didn't know yet that he was a medalist. We know now that he has won a bronze medal, which has got to be just, what a trip to win an Olympic medal. We did know as of the last time we updated the Olympics, Michael Marinaro, the Canadian pairs figure skater, we knew that they had finished fourth in the team exercise. What we did not necessarily know at the time were some of the details with the Russian Olympic Committee's team that had the skater that tested positive for a PED. And apparently they're still trying to work that whole situation out. It doesn't matter where you fall in your opinion of the situation. It's not good. It's not good for the sport. It's not good for the skater. Apparently the skater is young. It's just not good for anybody. And it's just kind of sad. But the fact of the matter is, I guess Canada could still get that bronze medal if they decide to take the medal away from the ROC.
That aside,
so both Oscar and Michael Marinaro, they both have competition yet to go. So their Olympics, I don't believe, are done yet. Apparently, we've got another 7 or 8 days worth of Olympics that we need to be watching.
Maybe we had some golfers competing last night in the Super or 2 days ago in the Super Bowl. Maybe we just need to start checking all sporting events from now on for our PDGA members.
That's really, really a good idea. As a matter of fact, why not just put the call out right now? If you are aware of a PDGA member competing on a pro level in any sport, baseball, hockey, Olympic sports, whatever, make sure we are aware. We'll make sure to shout that out here on PDGA Radio, like we have for our couple of Olympians. I know for a fact there are several. There's a hockey goalie, and his name escapes me at this moment. He's got a basket.
Yes.
Airbrushed. Yes. On his helmet.
Yes.
Right. And there are a number of baseball players I know that like to play disc golf on their off days. So
there are a lot of professional athletes and actors and singers that are now competing. Our sport is definitely growing. I'm sure. Have you watched any of our young hockey team that is like majority college hockey players that got picked for?
Mm-hmm.
I guarantee you some of those people play.
No doubt about it. They probably walk across the street from their college campuses and get a quick nine in as much as they can. Anyway, clearly I need to go and do some research, maybe a couple of member searches. So I'm going to get out of here and go get started on that, because otherwise I won't feel like I'm doing my job. Back here next week on PDGA Radio with a very exciting guest as we lead into the Las Vegas Open. Lots and lots to do. See you then.